If you people will kindly quit communicating, we'll talk about communication. Holy. This reminds me of a speech class in college. They sit there and talk like mad between break and when they start the class, nobody wants to say anything. Oh. This would be a class in Paleolithic communication, snuggling up to the fire and keeping warm. Yeah, I'm kind of really enjoying this book that sits over here on the stand, the Sabretooth Curriculum. You ought to look at that sometime.
I've read it. It's very delightful.
That's cool. And, the Sabretooth Curriculum. There's a lot of truth in there. I suppose this fire is the best mode of communication, though, in a way. Having a little chill in the air this morning helps out. We want to pull together. I think some of you have heard this poem, so you can go back to sleep. But it is about that. Because the best forms of communication don't involve words anyhow. And certainly not recognizable pictures. But it's probably through touch. Certainly it's through human interaction that doesn't depend upon one of the more or less blatant forms of information sharing. I just called it snuggle. Young boys crowd around the phonograph. The hard rock clashes with the contentment on their faces. Broad-beamed babes and their shouldered gallants huddle up to sauna rocks, the fever of the day cooling on and under the pressure of the brazing heat. The mother rubs her nose against the infant's cheek. The swimmers struggle through stones to creak. The mustache man draws the ripened blonde to him with an oblique glance. The youngsters in their own world push and prance, landing blows of love on side and back at every chance. The old dog sleeps half in, half out the sun, nose snuggled up the tail, which twitches on. The grass grasps the shallow soil like lovers' distracted fingers in mesh and faded hair. Life pulls close to warm and soft, to wet and loud, in flesh or flood, to actualize in outward terms the oneness throbbing in the blood. So I suppose it's about like a cockfight or something like that. You have to draw a crowd first. You have to get people's attention. And communication does involve, first of all, the creation of community. Because communication, and I think that we forget this at Holden Village too, and that's a shame since we're dedicated against propositions like this. Communication is two-way, not one-way. And communication is a possibility only in a community. We have before us a great number of sociological bits and pieces and reports on psychological factors having to do with man and his society. One of the more recent that I've mentioned in previous weeks, and some of you may have heard me mention it before, is Dean Kelly's book on why the conservative churches are growing, in which he goes through and analyzes the types of people that are drawn to types of religious groupings, and then what are the characteristics of these groups, and what sort of hopefulness from a social standpoint do they show for tomorrow. And unfortunately, the kind of thing that I just said is apparently dying out, like the dinosaur. People who like to engage in dialogue and give and take, who don't simply like being bombarded with slides or movies or words or anything else constantly so that it's all reception, 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 but who want the chance to talk back and to fully participate, these kinds of people, the dialoguers, if you want to call them that, are on the way out, apparently, from all the sociological reports. And the type of person, intents and purposes, simply an idiot, because he sits and he's bombarded and stimulated, but that's it, it just is received, is on the way in, because the mark of distinction between a church-type group that's growing, it's called conservative, and one that is not growing, it's called liberal, just for the heck of it, is that if you can fix up a community, so-called community, atmosphere in which people do nothing but parrot the party line and talk at each other instead of engaging in dialogue, for some reason other people are attracted to that group and think of it as, quote, confessional, creedal, solid, doctrinally, you know, profound, and, you know, the wave of the future, if you will. And from a human point of view, they aren't incorrect. The fastest growing groups are the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons, who don't exactly specialize in philosophical argumentation. So I suppose what I want to say to you, with the mixture of cynicism and world weariness that's my marker around here, is this, that which we are about to undertake is sort of saber-toothed curriculi, or paleolithic, if you will, but God help us if this continues to be the case, because the new dark ages that are coming before us will make the last dark ages look like, you know, a kindergarten attempt to create Bergen-Belsen or Buchenwald. We have reached, really, a juncture in the road when flying the flags of Christianity or liberalism or education or science or whatever else is just not enough. But within the camp itself called Christian, there is this divergency that can only be thought of, I suppose, from my point of view, as the ascendancy of the demonic and the inhumane and the anti-God, if you will, in our society. To communicate, there has to be a community, and a community does not consist in one big duck pecking all the little ducks and making them keep in line. That is not the characteristic that we would think of as communicative. I suppose one of the signs of a non-community community and of a non-communicating communication is that everything is well thought out in advance also, and that there are answers for everything. Arthur Kessler, who had a very long distinguished career in Germany, in Europe, before coming to Great Britain and then to this country, has written a great many books and movies. He made No Darkness at Noon, and his writing in the book, The God That Failed, The Rejection of Communism, The Yogi and the Commissar, various other kinds of books, makes very clear, extremely clear, particularly when you get into some of his sort of personal reflections upon his courtship with Marxism and so forth, that the really demonic element, not in Marxism as a philosophy, but in it as it was practiced by the Bolsheviks as a political system and as a form of community, was not that a man would believe lies, and not that believing lies, because what we believe does have tremendous effect on how we live and treat other people, not that he would therefore become crude and callous and perhaps could pull off the kinds of things under Stalin that were almost as bad as Hitler, but that within the system itself there was this one-way barrage and this newspeak, you know, of nothing but the party line, which I'm forever reminded of when I hear people saying, don't you love Jesus, isn't he sweet? Oh, I love Jesus, hallelujah, good morning, you know, God bless you. I can only think of, you know, Animal Farm or something like that. I'm honest, it doesn't matter what the words are, you know. But what you are, speak so loudly, we really don't hear what you say. But the terrible thing is that once you begin to suspect that all of these fine words, and there certainly is something very fine about the belief that the poor of the earth ought to have their share in the sun, which is the basis of Marxism. Once you begin to see that these are just words and they're being used to batter and barrage, to put, as in the caricature book Animal Farm, some of you know what that is, where the pigs take over, the pigs in position of power, you begin to suspect this, and perhaps it's only in your mind or only in private conversation you begin to pull away from this and be skeptical, then you are automatically, at least under the Stalinist type system that Kessler knew, ready for execution. Under the Lutheran system, you're ready for a heresy trial. But, you know, each one has his own way of handling this. But the tragic thing is, not that then, you know, this, what we can see now is very clearly not a community, it's not a church, it is not a political party, whatever you're talking about, but it is just simply a prison fastened on people's minds. It is simply a way of, as it were, putting the black bar of bastardy across the image of God in man. It's simply a way of destroying love and trust and fellowship among human beings and imposing the will of whoever happens to have the instruments of power on others. When you begin to see that, it is not the ultimate demonic thing that you are shot or tried or executed or otherwise disgraced. That is, after all, the way crude people have always handled their problems. But the demonic thing, I suppose this is the one point that I want to make this morning, is that the system has the persuasive power, by virtue of the one-way newspeak, that before you die, you say, praise Stalin, God bless Lenin, hallelujah to Marx, I am, you know, a new thought deviationist pervert. And as it says at the end of one of Kessler's books, one feels the bullet enter the back of the head and welcomes it as a new victory for the people. It is not that we are slaves and not that we are weak and ignorant, but that we accept our slavishness and our weakness and die like sheep, as one of our own poets put it.
Tragedy 50 years. Not that men die, but that men die like sheep.
And you see, to hold out the community then is to hold out not that. And the mark that the community is not present, and that means in Christian terms that Christ is not present, that no God activity could possibly be going on, is that it is one way. It is relatively structured and relatively dictatorial, no matter how pleasantly that is handled. Because remember, you buy vacuum cleaners not because a man holds a gun on you, but because he persuades you with sweet words. And it is not two-way. There is no living experience. Well, the tragic thing is, you see, that men get what they want. And the stories are so old and so overused, I hate to refer to them, but of course, Dostoevsky was after this in his little brief description of the Grand Inquisitor in Brothers Karamazov. Men do not want the freedom that Christ brings of community, of give and take, of uncertainty, but rather, for the most part, we rather have a good pension plan, we would rather have good wage guarantees, we would rather have built-in job security, we would rather be secure than free. And these things may all be fine in the economic realm, but in the spiritual realm, of course, it means that you settle, as the cardinal tells Christ, supposedly, who has come back again to earth. Men do not want the bread of freedom, but the bread we give them, which is of forgiveness and their security. Believe what we tell you, and you are eternally secure. It's an amazing thing how we pervert Christianity, and have in every denomination and form, into what is nothing but Marxism with different words. we would rather have not community, but the fact that if the big duck does peck everybody in line, he also is able to peck off other big ducks. We trade our freedom for protection. That may seem a little far-fetched and far afield from communication, but you see, when a genuine communication opens up, it can only open up on the same basis, I suppose, that makes it possible to jump out of an airplane, on parachute, or to do other kinds of dangerous or relatively dangerous things, you know, confidently enough that you can pull them off well. And that is that you're completely non-defensive. You aren't agitated and hassled about it, and that you're completely, as far as that's a human possibility, open and ready to risk everything. No one is really a crap shooter who keeps $50 in his boot. The only real gambler, I suppose, is the one who throws it all out there. And the only real communicator is the one who is totally upfront. And it's this kind of openness, of course, that can be healing as well as communicating, and that we really very seldom experience. Yes, sir? Jesus never kept 10 back in his sandal, you can bet that. He put it all up front. Which was, of course, what was distressing to other people who were also in the communications business. They had two things, two ways of looking at it. One group said, how can this man say these stupid things? He doesn't even know his ABCs, and it says that in the Greek. He's never been taught to read. How can he talk that way? And then another group said, you know, we would rather listen to this man than to the Pharisees, because he speaks with authority and not like the scribes. And I suppose the essence of the authority there lay in the openness, the willingness to risk everything, to be completely open, where, like a window being thrown open, God possibly might be able to come through. But the Pharisee hedged himself around. To speak like a scribe was to say, and it says this in Timothy 1 and the Augsburg Confession, Article 31, Paragraph 4, and of course the Declaration of Independence, and, you know, this is like the scribe. Yeah.
As was spoken this morning at Matins, to be backed up like that, so that you're not really risking anything.
Yeah, exactly. Science is fine as long as you're working with inanimate matter, or with energy that has a natural base, but it doesn't work very well with living human beings, even though we can typologize the way people's minds work and their behavior. It's still, when we think we have them all in a bucket, it's when they surprise us. I better get a match too, that log's too heavy too. Yeah. So the other day when I was sitting in here listening to a learned discussion, which, of course, you know, you can't pin it on the faculty around here. You have to pin it on yourself. That's another one of the good things about true communication. Everybody bears responsibility. You know, you all will be shot as deviationist. You know, and if one of our chairmen gets the good word about us, we'll probably all go to the same heresy trial. So that when I say this, I'm not condemning a smaller group of men and women, but all of us, including myself. Who's with these? This is just called Pardon Me, and you can have a copy if you like this morning. The lectures are so cunningly devised. Reports give evidence that everything was tried, and if not found warranted, reprised. The answers to, or at least, the historical disillusion of problems manifold are reached in graceful resolution. Pardon me if I seem ungrateful for these solutions. Too much precision gives me spiritual indigestion, an answer I can live without, but not without a question. Because you see, the characteristic of the so-called conservative group or the one-way group, and this is how they describe themselves as well as how the sociologist of religion does it, is that there is one-way communication. You do not argue back with your scriptural instructor in the Jehovah's Witness system. It's like, you know, in the military you say, yes, how much and what color, you know, you just respond. You don't argue back. You don't ask questions. When you're told 144,000, not one less and not one more, will be saved, you don't say, yes, but you know, I've been thinking about figuring out all the people that I know and love, and it's 141,001. You know, what are we going to do about those extra few? That's not a possibility. If I tell you you're justified by faith and that's attached to the baptism and so forth, you don't argue back with me. That's what it says, son. You know. Yes, sir. Take it. One-way communication. That, remember, don't be afraid to substitute words. We can see it very easily in the Jehovah's Witnesses, but we don't see it as easily in ourselves. Not two-way. You don't have a chance to ask the question, as it were. And a prepared and ready answer. You can almost see this, for example, and I've always kind of appreciated the young Mormon missionaries, the young boys that travel around age 18, you know, and go. But they've come to see you and they'll break out their little books and so forth. And then you slyly ask them a question that you realize is not covered in one of the books, and you can almost like see the record arm lift up and move over a notch to the next best thing. Because, and that's not just the Mormons, Lutherans and Presbyterians and Catholics do it too in their own way, but the question is, you know, I don't really know what your question means. I haven't got the intelligence. I don't have damn all sense of how that fits into anything. So, you know, I'll refer it to the next best thing. You know, you say you have found a gold tooth. Well, I'll send you to the dentist, you know. If you found a Bible, I'll send you to the chaplain. You know, I don't know how to deal with your problem, but I'll refer it to the next best thing. And we do that. Whereas it says somewhere in Scripture about take no thought for what you shall say when they bring you up before councils and magistrates. But in the time that the decision is pressed upon you, the words will be furnished. Rather unusual thing. And possible, not possible to the constipated personalities that we produce in churches. Possible only to the open and the free. In that day, whether they question you about your gambling habits, your drinking, or what you believe about Christ, the open personality will be able to answer, usually fairly fruitfully. So it's a question, I suppose, of how unfurled we allow our inner selves to be. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'd like to hear you talk now and challenge me. You've got the time to do it.
But this is, are we talking about levels of communication?
Not levels, but actually the difference between communication and what is only pseudo-communication. Because listening to lecture, being bombarded and receiving, is not communication. Any more than it's communication if I'm out at sea and you're on land with a wireless, you know, and I can hear you, but you can't hear me. That doesn't help me a bit when my motor conks out. Communication only takes place when it's two-way. Not just that. I want to get through all of the words and everything today and say that no communication takes place unless it's two-way. It's a misuse of the term. The other term we'd have to use is propaganda.
As a shaft of light enters into a pool of water.
But it's refracted back, or you wouldn't see it.
It doesn't alter the elements. It doesn't alter the water. It's just a wind.
Yeah, but don't use that illustration. That illustration sounds more like spirit than it does mind to me. I would say that the shaft of light pierces the water and is refracted, or else we wouldn't see the light. There's a communication, if you will, but it comes back.
Okay.
within the past 2 years, I've become more and more aware of communication and some of its problems. One of the main problems being saying a word which means something to you, but when you send it out, it means something entirely different to the opposite person. Consequently, you are not communicating, but you do not know you're not communicating. And so the need for a recheck every now and then to see that you really have, you really are communicating. And one thing I long for is after a lecture, maybe it's here, maybe it's a sermon at church, to have a chance to sit down with some people and what do you think to say? Said, what did this mean to you? To check out your own listening power. And particularly, am I at the point that I would like to do this on Sunday morning after the sermon to see what was this really that he was trying to get at? I thought this, but really, was this so?
I'd like to just say something very outrageous right here at this point. I would think that the sermon, as we traditionally practice it in the Protestant church, is a beautiful example of non-communication.
Right.
And I dare say it has no biblical warrant whatsoever, because in the Bible, real communication took place. Boy, they picked up stones and threw. Now that's response. Or they said, men and brethren, my God, I'm cut to the heart. What must I do to be saved? That's response. But, you know, we get up and say amen to the peace of God, which not only passes all understanding, it's not understandable. I'm here to tell you, in my position as the foremost heretic among 11 million Lutherans on this continent, that the sermon is unchristian as we practice it. It's not communication. And, you know, boy, the bristles start to rise when you suggest that, you know, this is the truth, because, you know, one-way communication, you know. The pigs are equal to the sheep, only more so.
I suggest that the man who falls asleep during the sermon is communicating.
He's communicating, you know, a kind of, it's a sort of an Italian gesture without hands, you know, really, it is, yeah.
They call it a service. No, they don't.
They call it liturgy, from the light ergos in Greek, which means the work of the people. That means that all the people work together.
Well, that's what I mean. Nobody's working and it's not together. They just read something.
They're just listening. Yeah. The most beautiful example of this is your free service, where that you have a spiritual athlete. He's nice looking and he has a good voice. And he entertains everybody, including long, lengthy prayers in which he entertains God. I'm sure God waits, you know, reverently waiting for those things. Think about it. Just think about it. And that's not what happened when Jesus preached and not what happened when the apostles preached. It is more Christian to throw a stone than it is to sit there like a stone. Paul's famous saying about Holden Village, where we would like to be 11 rather than a lump, I think, you know, really gets to it. But yet, I've just sat around and watched us lumpify around here of late. And, you know, it's just natural, because that's what we think.
I can give an example of this at a very innocent level. We have within our town a filling station that has a neon sign of a devil with a pitchfork and a tail. He's red. He jumps up and down and advertises as gasoline. On Sunday morning, the minister says, and who is the devil? And you know how you pause.
He sells gasoline, right?
And this little kid down in the front row said, the red guy with the tail and the pitchfork. And it just stopped everybody there, including the minister. And pretty soon the minister said, well, I asked a question and I got an answer. It shows he was listening.
But it shows something else. It shows that he was yet at that level where God and man can communicate with him, that Jesus refers to in the famous thing that we take as just a parable about, you know, unless you become like little children, you won't enter the kingdom. They use the word community for kingdom, which is not such a bad skew, and substitute communication for community for the sake of clarity here, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But what do we do? And as a father of four children, you know, I can tell you that this is absolutely true, and I'm just as guilty as you are. We take a little kid who wants to respond. My goodness, did you hear that? And jumps up. That's my daddy preaching up there, you know. I've gone through that four times. But what do we get? Pinch, pinch, slap, slug, you know, you're going in the nursery, you know. Don't communicate. You're here to listen, not to do anything. And so, you know, by the time you get to be 20 years old, you know, you've gone through all the pinching of confirmation and everything. You understand, everybody is equal in the farmyard, only the pigs with the white robes on are more equal than anybody else. And we wonder, you know, where did the kingdom go? Where is the life we have lost in living, TSA, it says, you know. Where is the joy we have lost in happiness? Where is the communication we have lost in information? Those are words from one of his poems, and they're very accurate. Where? A true church service, I suppose, or liturgy, would be one that would look like chaos to an outsider until he came and sat down in it. Just as walking in the midst of a good movie, it's just absolutely disorienting until you sort of feel what's going on. But we say, you know, in the Marxist Lutheran Church, everything ought to be done decently and in order. Yeah?
That one-way communication is very comfortable for the receivers, too.
It's comfortable for both parties, yeah.
It's more than comfortable, though. We've become so instilled with all of that that it's devilishly hard to get out of that mold. You know, you just can't hardly do that anymore. Like you say, all the pinching that's going on, yeah, has gone on, makes it nigh on to impossible.
And it looks like you're unsocial and really breaker of the community when you really want to communicate. I saw this, in fact, I've usually seen it in negative senses. Maybe you have too. I knew a Methodist minister who was extremely conservative to the point of view of being practically a racist, and this in the North, not in the South. And when he was present at another man of another denomination preaching, which was really coming down hard on the racial situations, he got up, stomped his foot, and walked out. Everybody looked. And I know by a certain knowledge there were 14 or 15 other people that felt just the way he did about it, that they sat there and then shook hands at the door. I'm not at all sure who has the greater sin, you know, if you can measure such things. I'm not, you know, really saying that this man was a good man and so forth, but at least he was honest and he did try to communicate. He threw a stone, if you will. I would suggest to you that throwing a stone is sometimes more an act of faith than just walking away or sitting still. But we do that, and I think the unfairness of the fact that, you know, we can't just absolutely 100% proclaim the kerygma, the gospel, or whatever happens to be the latest terminology of newspeak that's going around. And I think we need to be just as critical of Christian newspeak as any other. We can't do that 100% accurately, and anyone who would claim that would certainly put himself outside the Christian tradition, because the human personality, one's own prejudices, you know, his experience, its color it. We say we want more illustration. What does that mean? We want more of your opinion as to what this means, and your opinion doesn't have the standard of doctrine. No way is it normative to doctrine. It's just an opinion. In fact, if you'll pardon me for saying so, but as a denizen of seminaries and theological schools for 15 years or so, I've heard very few illustrations that didn't absolutely controvert the point that was trying to be made by them. Very few. But that's just a little inside professional communicating position. But you see, we want that, and we want to hear that, and just accept that. And we don't want to face up to the fact that the guy in the pew, even though he's not a, quote, theologian, unquote, is part of it. And he may be able to say, hey, I think you just absolutely missed the whole point in your illustration. What about that? Would you ever think that if you carried that one step further? And really, the more entertaining illustrations are heartwarming or long-lasting, the more I've played little games with this professionally for a long time, you carry one step more and it's like positively demonic. but of course you have to apply your mind in each case. You see, the way a thing is communicated, even if you accept the fact that there are certain revealed truths or spiritual realities, it doesn't cover everything you say. But everything has to be, as it's put in one of the Pauline letters, tested and tried as by fire. And he suggests that most things are going to be burned up. If you'll remember that, very, very little will survive the testing, which we like to put that at the end of the world someplace and God's throwing thunderbolts. But I think Paul is talking about in the crucible of the community and of its experience, each man's work will be tested. Each of our communications will be tested. And the little petty details and things of that nature really are unimportant when we look at it that way. Even details as of fact. It comes down to the crucial element, I suppose, as to how close is it to, for want of better terms, I'll call spiritual realities at this point. But that, of course, who would want to tolerate a church member that was constantly controverting the pastor? You wouldn't want anybody in your Sunday school class that was always asking you questions. Unless you were a good communicator, a good teacher, let's say yourself, then you would know that you had found someone who is alive and not dead.
You know, it kind of interests me, John, to hear about this problem the Lutherans are having pertaining to sermons.
Yeah.
As usual, we in First Presbyterian Church are a decade ahead.
I see. Thank God for humility, too.
We kind of thought we had that problem, too. So we solved it in this way. We kind of flip over the pastor's sermon before he delivers it, and the things that we think are worthy to survive. That is why we put one man in the pulpit, and then we put one man in the lectern,
uh-huh.
And then we spot a couple of shills in the audience,
yeah.
Congregation, excuse me. And we sort of cut this thing up in little pieces.
I see.
So it becomes questions and answers. And then we had dialogue, trilogue, quadrilogue.
Hopefully get everybody.
My Latin phrases. Is there a quinquilogue?
How about cacophony?
You know,
so that's even better.
It's completely spontaneous. The man in the pulpit reads some spontaneous thing off a piece of paper for the man in the lectern, and before the man in the lectern may get a chance to use the answer he seems to have prepared, we pull a switch. The answer is on a piece of paper that one of the shills in the congregation has in his hand. So his thoughtful, searching question comes off the piece of paper in the audience. It's terrific spontaneity.
About as much as reading a manuscript. What's the difference? It sounds really silly, Paul, and you know, and I've seen some similar kinds of experiments even among benighted Lutherans, and it's really easy to laugh at it, but it says as spontaneous and as human communicative as one man reading one set of papers, which is what it comes down to most of the time. You can't really use this as a judgment, but if you will see who's holding the manuscript and who's not holding the manuscript, at least you've got a little tip off. You can almost, you know, forget about the guys who's carrying the papers. If he really had thought about what he had to say, he wouldn't need the paper in the first place. Now, that's not 100%, you know, accurate and so forth. But Luther, I think, had some little things to say about this, too, about how long it was before he could, you know, abandon carrying his notes and that sort of thing with him. See, we say, but it'd be so inaccurate, you'll begin misquoting the Bible. I don't know that Luther ever quoted the Bible accurately any place, and all those massive things. But, you know, I don't think it makes a damn, because, you know, accurately according to whose translation and to what? and to the spiritual meaning or some literal, you know, wooden meaning on the surface. It doesn't really matter. So we have to sacrifice maybe accuracy, doctrinaire precision, not just for spontaneity, because in effect you could get spontaneity. What you suggested is like setting up a play or something like that. At first it looks that way, but if you rehearse it 50 times, art, you know, replaces life, and spontaneity becomes more spontaneous than it would be spontaneously. I mean, that's what drama is. But the point is, even that, we sacrifice smoothness and enjoyability, if you will, and easy receptivity for the conflict, for the ragged edges, for the warmth of life, like that fire, which may not be ultimately beautiful or well set together there, but it is warm, and it attracts us, and it holds us together. In fact, I think one of the prophets had that to say about Christ himself. He had no form or comeliness that we should desire him, no beauty, no handsomeness. Rather,
are we going to hear you again?
I hope you have the chance sometime.
What I'm wondering, I don't suppose I'm going to go home to my congregation and change this. And no, I was wondering, as we listen to a 15-minute or 20-minute sermon, were we in error then, or too complacent to let you talk 15 minutes
That's
uninterrupted?
Right. You were, yeah.
I mean, we're no better. No, we're no better, and you are no better than our preacher on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
You said it would be better if the guys prepare a sermon then, and to let him finish his thought before you jump in, or to jump in right when you have a question or one.
Oh, I think these are tactics, and probably your first one is.
I didn't object to listening to you 15 minutes to set a basis for this.
Yeah,
if we get a chance to rebut afterwards.
But you've had that chance and haven't taken it.
Well,
really,
but I mean, do we have to do it at the sermon, or can we do it in the Bible study Sunday night?
You can do it any time. In fact, you can do it at 11 o'clock today if you want to.
Yeah, but I mean, in church, I was wondering
church. Well, now that's, you know, when you get into things like that, these are things we can't decide. The community has to decide that. Maybe it would be in the church service, maybe it would be afterwards, maybe it would be before. But you see, this is another point, if you allow me to pontificate, and then we'll go to the next class. This is the thing, we always want to say, but you know, how are we going to do that? Which is like saying, my car is not running right, and you jump up and say, you know, well, do I need an X screw or a Y screw? We want to get down to details. Let me just say one thing, as an educator, at least I've got some credential in that, it doesn't really make a goddamn what screw you use and details of things, because those are easy things that you can fiddle around with and fix. It's diagnosing the problem that's what you pay the mechanic for.